Ladies and gentlemen, please take your seats, silence your cell phones, for you are now listening to Much Ado About Wrestling!
Hey yo, welcome fair listeners to Much Ado About Wrestling, the show that aims to educate about the theatrical world of professional wrestling. I'm one half of your scholarly presenters, Andrew Terrence Caperline, and with me, as always, is the bad guy, Tyler Ward. Tyler, it's been a minute.
It has. It's been quite a minute, or two, you might even say.
Yeah.
Or how you doing, man?
If you're Eric Bischoff, you would say three minutes. Yeah, we talked for a bit to catch up before turning on the microphone, and you made the excellent point that the last time that we recorded, a war had not broken out. So
I'm pretty sure, yeah, it seems ages ago.
Yeah. But so I'll apologize to the listeners. That's on me, that I had some, I was in another state and I had some stuff to do that prevented us from recording. And I was like, okay, how busy could these 2 weeks in wrestling be?
Yeah.
Like, it'll be fine that we miss an episode. And it's actually like, no, we have like 10 things to talk about.
So many things happened.
I don't know that there's like a worse week I could have picked in the past, 2 years of wrestling.
I mean, there was just so much that happened. I mean, so much. There was good, there was bad, there was very bad.
Yeah, oh. It's a real gamut. I'm looking at the rundown. I don't know if there's something we, that actually, didn't even make the cut for us here. I don't think so.
I guess we'll find out.
Yeah. Yeah, we're going to figure out when we're talking about it. We had a lot of allusions to Scott Hall in that opening. I'm sure if you listen to this show, by now you are aware that he passed away. We're recording this on Tuesday, so he passed away yesterday. Officially. We're going to talk about that in just a second. But before we get to that, we have two things we want to talk about that are not news items before we hop in. You know, we tout that this wrestling podcast is different than others because it is more about the storytelling aspects, and we're not just one of the million wrestling podcasts. That's a hyperbole. Million wrestling podcasts that...
Well, I don't know.
Yeah, there's a lot that just recap the wrestling news like they're a talking head sports show. This week, we're going to be exactly that.
Yep.
We got to catch up. I have some ideas for some other things we can do to get back on track, but this week we just have to catch up.
Yes, we do.
Have you ever seen, I know you were not a sports guy, Tyler.
I am not, no.
Despite having the body for a million different sports.
I appreciate that so much, but people are going to think that I am far more in shape than I actually am. I'm quite a tall man, yes. So I've been approached by many a basketball coach in my day. Go ahead.
Oh, sorry. My cat's going crazy. You have what basketball analysts who are at the NBA draft salivate about with young men, where they're like, he has length. It's not just that you're tall. You also have long arms.
I do. So yes, I've never really been a sports guy. I've played almost every sport, but in terms of following them and stuff, not really. My favorite sport is a choreographed one. So
yeah, ice dancing. So I was going to ask, have you ever seen the show Pardon the Interruption?
I have not.
Worked at a bar for a number of years.
So I did. We didn't have a TV. We didn't have TV in the kitchen, though.
So. Oh, good point. Yeah. Okay. So, Pardon the Interruption is this classic sports talking head show where two old guys debate weekly or daily news and sports, and they have so many topics that basically they have a little buzzer that goes off after 3 minutes. to tell them that they have to tell move them on. The guy,
they have to move yeah. on. Okay.
And then they finish up their points and then move on. So I say that to say that this episode, I think we have 8 topics that we're going to try to get through. So I'm going to try my best to keep us to 5 minutes to each one of them.
Okay. Okay.
But we're gonna see how we do. For the first one, we can go as long as we want. Yeah. Speaking of challenges, before we get to these topics, the other news we have, the other way that we're going to be like a sports podcast this month, we're doing something different with the pod. We are giving the listeners another chance to win a $50 Pro Wrestling Tees gift card from us.
Mm-hmm.
We're hopping on the March Madness bandwagon here. Everyone loves a bracket, even if you don't love sports. The NCAA tournament starts officially on Wednesday, but really it starts on Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
So we're doing our own bracket where, because of the news that Brock Lesnar versus Roman Reigns will be a title unification match, we're going to unify those titles.
Again.
We thought, again, this is not the first time or second time or third time this has happened. So in honor of this gigantic main event, and for the love of bracketology that pops up this time of year, we wanted to look at the 64 best world champions in WWE history and determine the best, most undisputed champion of all of them. So what does that mean? It means we've put them in a bracket, and we are asking all of you, our listeners, to go vote for who you think should win in each of these matchups. Basically, we're going to start the voting this week and have it run for a week for this round, and then we'll move on to the next round and keep doing that. And then after WrestleMania sometime, we will have our winner. So we're looking for you to vote for a combination of kayfabe, who would win, who had multiple title wins, memorable moments, both winning and defending the title.
If you also want to pick your favorites, I'm not going to say no to that.
But there's some of these where it's
some of them are a little too obvious. I've filled out my bracket, and some of them were really hard. I was like, oh, this is actually a good match. Then some were just a little too easy.
I tried to, when ones were tough, I really tried to think about, I tried to close my eyes and picture what that person looked like as world champion in WWE. And if I couldn't think of a distinct image or moment, I'm like, okay, they weren't as good of a world champion in WWE. Cause that's really what we're looking for here. Who was the best as champion? We also included the WWE championship, the World Heavyweight Championship, the Universal Championship, the WWECW championship, because that was a world title. The NXT and NXT UK championships, and the WCW championship for the short period of time that it was part of the Alliance.
So those were
everyone we included. You can go to muchadowrestling.com to vote now. Every round that you vote, you put it in your email address, and that qualifies you for our, we're going to pick one lucky winner at the end of all this to win that $50 gift card. So make sure to go vote and do that part at the bottom to be eligible. Looking at the bracket, was there a matchup in this first round that you were most excited about, or which one you're most interested to see how it goes? Man. A toughest one? If not, that's okay. There's a lot of them.
There were a lot of them. Not so much the toughest ones. There were ones I remember where specifically it was a little too easy for me to pick. I don't even remember who he was put up against, but whoever Alberto Del Rio was put with, I was like, man, screw that guy, and I just picked the other person.
Well, that's an interesting one because we crunched a lot of numbers to come up with the seeding for this bracket, and it is based on number of title wins, prestige of the title, how long they had the title for. And Del Rio, is one of those that is a 6 seed, which seemed high to me.
Yeah,
but he might get a pass to the second round because he got lucky to be up against new WWE Hall of Famer Sid. Psycho Sid.
Oh, it was Psycho.
I feel like
neither
of them are particularly distinct as WWE champions. But don't worry, because like if Del Rio gets past that first round, in the second round he will be against the victor of Bret Hart and Rob Van Dam. So
okay, good luck.
Yeah, it's going to be a little bit tougher side. Yep. That region of our bracket, the big gold belt region, has most of the members of Evolution plus Shawn Michaels in it, I think. Mm-hmm. So that I'm excited to see the potential matchups of similar people.
Yeah. There. I definitely found myself torn on a lot of them. I think, like you just said, I think Batista was pitted against Pete Dunne, I think, was one of them.
You mean, I don't know who Pete Dunne is. Do you mean Butch?
Oh, excuse me. The
there's a news item that didn't make our rundown.
The Incredible Butch. But yeah, I think those two were paired together, and I was torn. I was like, man, like, you gotta pick Batista, but what I would give to pick Pete Dunne, or I'm sorry, Butch Dunne.
Yeah. Butch Dunne. Is he officially Butch Dunne, or is he just Butch?
No, he's just Butch, but I'm going to hold on to his previous self as much as I can.
I'm trying to find now where
Pete Butch.
Yeah,
Butch
Batista
Dunne.
is in that same side of the bracket, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah, there's a lot of close ones. I like, you know, Dean Ambrose was the first WWE champion on the new, like, when they did the draft split again, the brand split. He's right up against Chris Jericho, who's the first WWE undisputed champion.
Right.
That's a fun one.
Mm-hmm.
Man, there's a lot of
really cool matchups. We encourage you all to go fill out your brackets.
Yeah, this is gonna be fun. I can't wait. Mm-hmm. I can't wait to see what comes of this. So we should go. We should start. We're gonna start the clock with the first topic of our rundown. And okay, it's the least fun of them, and it's the death of Scott Hall. So it was reported on Sunday that due to complications after hip surgery, not to interrupt this, but like both of our cats seem really, really punchy for this episode. So just know, I would say like enjoy the juxtaposition of us talking about a sad thing as our cats just like bellow away at us.
Yes. also.
Yeah.
But
so after hip surgery complications from it, Scott Hall was put on life support and then was taken off of life support. And then shortly before Raw, it became official that Hall had passed away at the age of 63.
Yep.
No big questions here. We got 5 minutes to just eulogize him. Do you want to start and kind of give maybe your initial reaction or thoughts?
Sure.
Or what stood out? Yeah.
I mean, it's Scott Hall was absolutely a legend in the business. When hearing like the reports of saying like, oh, he had some complications in surgery and he's on life support and is thinking he might not make it, it's really, really sad, really upsetting. Even for, you know, a guy at his age and stuff, for a wrestler specifically, someone coming up in the time of wrestling that Scott Hall was back in the 80s and 90s, to be fair, a lot of those guys, they lived a very rough lifestyle, and making it to 63 was not always guaranteed. There has been a lot of Scott Hall's contemporaries who did not make it that far. And so I'm certainly not saying that like I wasn't surprised, but I think that, you know, it's a testament to say that after he got clean several years ago that he made it this far. So
yeah, I agree with you on that. I just want to piggyback on it that it almost felt more shocking to me now, because as recent as, I'm trying to think how long he's been clean for, as recent as maybe like 6 years ago, it felt like he was almost like Mick Jagger, or not Mick Jagger, he was almost like Keith Richards, in that it was like anytime you heard about him, you're like, how is that guy still alive?
Exactly.
Yeah. And he had like Scott Hall, sorry, we're talking about the bad stuff first with him, but I think it's important to to paint a picture of him that he had like multiple private and public health problems with drug addiction, and it was astounding. And like, thank like him and Jake Roberts, it was crazy that they're both still alive until, you know, Sunday with Scott Hall. And it's like, can't say enough good things about Diamond Dallas Page and DDP Yoga for changing the life trajectory for these two people.
Well, like, I think Scott, without him, there's no guarantee that he would have made it this far.
And it's like, it's fascinating the different, the way that like his reputation changed once he got clean. And it's like, it was easy to have a kind of negative view of Scott Hall as a like backstage politic and like a guy who was maybe getting overpaid in WCW. And like, there were ways you could be like, oh, that guy made the business worse. But I think that those were all really short-sighted. Clearly, like, clearly this is a guy who for that like click reputation was one of the first bad guys to make being a bad guy cool while still getting heat, and was one of the first bad guys to really like put everyone over.
Absolutely.
This guy was never a world champion. Anywhere.
Never world champion. And there's, you know, like some of his most historical moments in his career are putting people over that he didn't have to. X-Pac, the 1-2-3 kid. Yeah. He literally made X-Pac's career. Like he didn't have to do that, but he was like, yeah, you're going to go over me. This unknown, essentially jobber gets the pin on one of the essentially top guys in WWF at the time. I mean, that's certainly a giving performer there.
He also gave, like, and people have recounted this story a lot recently too, he gave Sting his second gimmick, now the gimmick that everyone associates with him of the Brandon Lee the Crow ripoff. But like, Scott Hall was the one who gave new life to his career in the 90s, was like, hey Sting, you look a lot like this guy, this is what you should do. He's been a staple of the Performance Center for the past few years too. It's he is kind of like a wrestling Forrest Gump to me in like a lot of these pivotal places and moments that he's shown up in, for like both good and bad. I mean, I love his overselling of the Stone Cold Stunner at WrestleMania 18.
One of the best sells ever.
But like, this is the guy who jumps. He's the first outsider. He changes the way that kayfabe is treated in WCW. And he goes from Razor Ramon to being just Scott Hall, his own name. And that, that's a huge deal in and of itself, too. I want to read, like, because we could just gush about our favorite Scott Hall moments for, also, like, so funny. He's like an amazingly funny performer. But I want to read something that someone smarter than the two of us wrote about him, if that's okay.
Of course.
So this is from David Shoemaker. David Shoemaker runs the wrestling wing of The Ringer and got his start as being this guy who was writing wrestling eulogies in the like few years in the 2000s where most of Scott Hall's contemporaries were dying really early, and it was a real epidemic. And so this is from David Shoemaker's eulogy for Razor Ramon, for Scott Hall. This is the end of it. To make it look that easy is to make it look real, and Hall was, if nothing else, real. He made Razor Ramon so real, we forgot the inherent silliness of the whole thing almost immediately. Then he left that behind and became himself, by name anyway, and founding the NWO. And then his real life issues swallowed his ring career, and we watched that story. We watched that storyline unfold in the realest way possible. That gets us more or less to where we are today, saying goodbye to an aspirational villain. It's a heartbreaking story, but it's heartbreaking precisely because Hall gave so much to everyone he worked with and everyone who watched him. We lost out on his prime in like 10 different ways, yet he was a legend anyway. In his induction speech into the WWE Hall of Fame, Hall famously ended with this line, quote, "Hard work pays off, dreams come true, bad times don't last, but bad guys do," end quote. Hall's death isn't easy, not for the generation of fans and wrestlers he inspired, but there's something real in the outpouring of respect, love, and reminiscence of the joy he brought us all. Something important. The man could make a loss into something amazing. So there you go. I think that that final line sums up the complicated legacy of the good and bad of Scott Hall.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I recommend reading that whole piece if you have time. There are some really fascinating things about Scott Hall's life before he was a wrestler that I never knew about. That are, do you know about his PTSD and the kind of incidents he had as a young person?
I actually don't know about that. I know about some other incidents in his life that aren't the most positive, but yeah.
It put a lot of context into why this person ended up having substance abuse problems to me.
Right, exactly, yeah.
It's a really fascinating read, so I recommend that. I think we should move on to the second item. We did pretty good. I think there was like 7 minutes on that.
if there was one that we could spend a little more time on, I'm okay with that one.
Yeah. So from Scott Hall to Cody Rhodes, I was going to say to Cody Hall, which wouldn't have been inaccurate. So the second item, last night's Raw was mostly about remembering Scott Hall, but then it was also focused on this storyline between Seth Rollins and Kevin Owens. So it proceeded in the wake of tragedy from Jacksonville, Florida, the official home to AEW, the unofficial home of Cody Rhodes. The opening and closing of the show revolved around the storyline of best friends Kevin Owens and Seth Rollins trying to finagle their way onto the WrestleMania card, ending in a match between the two for the honor to host Steve Austin at Mania. Rollins lost the match, and despite chants of Cody from the crowd, we didn't see Cody Rhodes. Tyler, how confident are we now, right now, that Cody Rhodes versus Seth Rollins will happen at WrestleMania?
Right now, I'm like 15%.
Like, ooh, wow.
I don't think it's happening. I mean, I'm trying to give him the benefit of the doubt. Like, maybe if it's still happening, like, WWE has it in their minds. They're like, there's a better time for us to get the reveal, a better time for us to announce that Cody is back. But it just felt like if you weren't going to do it last night, then like, when are you going to do it? Can you do it? I don't think Cody's coming back. I don't know. So.
Yeah, it seems late. Like, assuming it is going to happen, I'm not. Yeah. We got, 3 weeks till WrestleMania now? I'm not sure. If the value of having Cody on WrestleMania is to make hype and sell tickets, then that window is like almost gone now, right?
So I mean, I would argue it at this point, it seems very much like that is out the window. And so it leads me to think like maybe this Cody reveal is something they're saving for Raw if they do have Cody. So like I don't know.
Yeah, well, that brings up a point. Like, okay, there are a few really big matches on the card that could be selling tickets, right? The main event, both women's main events, Edge versus AJ, Pat McAfee being there against Austin Theory are all things that could be selling this card. I think the Steve Austin news, which we'll talk about after this, is certainly the biggest, like, buy a ticket to come see Steve Austin. That's the biggest, like, ticket selling thing, right? So then is the idea that holding off on Cody, like, is Cody more valuable as, like, social clout, as, like, headline-grabbing news? Is it actually, like, wait until days before WrestleMania to announce him?
It could
be. Is that more valuable? Yeah.
I'm also curious as to maybe WWE doesn't think that Cody would actually move that many tickets.
Yeah.
So like that's a possibility. If they have Cody and if they're holding him to use him more as a like ha ha to AEW thing, then I could potentially see that. I could see them saying we don't need to announce him weeks ahead because he's not going to move tickets anyway. But I don't know. I mean, they are giving so many hints and little like Easter eggs and pointing to it that it's hard to say it's not going to happen, but I don't know.
Yeah, because it does. It seems like the biggest reaction you were going to get from revealing Cody would have been on Monday.
Yeah, exactly.
Because of the location. I've heard this narrative floated. Do you buy any truth to the statement that he was going to debut and then they held him off because of the passing of Scott Hall?
Like, I guess,
do you think that would have been in poor taste to have this big moment?
I don't know. I mean, potentially, but I don't think so. I would say, like, right on, like, just my gut is telling me I wouldn't think so, because I feel like they've done, you know, when other superstars and people important in the business have passed, like, they've had big storylines on the same episode. Like, they've had things like that. So I don't think that Cody Rhodes is a star, like, in a lot of people's minds, but in the grand picture of WWE, I don't think having a returning former mid-carder would negate that or like be in poor taste, you know?
I agree with you 100%. I think that, like, because I watched Raw on Monday and the second to last segment was a Scott Hall tribute video. And then they were ending with the main event. And I was like, okay, this is what they're setting me up for. They are doing this so that we can now tell the story of Cody debuting.
Right.
And I thought, like, if anything, after that kind of, like, dour second-to-last segment, you got to, like, send the fans home happy. So, like, I thought...
Also that, yeah.
It would have made more sense to go from a low to an emotional high. So I'm shocked it didn't happen. But again, I feel like the story they're telling is dictating that it will happen, but it just seems still so up in the air. Okay, let's assume that Cody is not signed and is not going to show up. Mm-hmm. What is Seth Rollins doing at WrestleMania? And I feel bad for him because I know the reports initially were that it was going to be Rollins versus Shane at WrestleMania, and then Shane got released.
That's not happening either.
And then Rollins versus Cody, and maybe Cody isn't going to sign the deal. Then what happens?
I think most likely, if Cody is not there, I think that they're going to casually insert Rollins into the KO Austin thing, even though, like, Rollins lost the match for the right to host him or whatever. I think you're going to have KO bring Austin out, talk for a minute, Rollins interrupts them, blah, blah, blah. Maybe Rollins gets hit with two stunners that night or something, like, you know. So I think they could very easily just insert him into that storyline if he truly doesn't have anything to do. Because I mean, at this point, I don't see them not using Seth Rollins in some fashion at WrestleMania.
Yeah, I agree with you there. I'm trying to see, like, where else on the card you could easily stick him into an already existing thing.
Yeah.
And I guess you could have him inserted into the what will eventually be the Finn Balor Damian Priest US mm-hmm. title match, or you can. That's kind of it.
Yeah,
for, like, looking at things to throw him into. You can't really add him to Sami Zayn versus Johnny Knoxville and have it make a lot of sense.
No.
Yeah, I feel like he also probably, I imagine the failsafe would have been to have him versus Austin Theory, and they must have felt good enough about Cody.
That makes way more sense to me than Pat McAfee versus Austin Theory. I mean,
yeah, but Pat McAfee is such a star, like, that they got to get him on the card somehow.
Fair.
Is my feeling. I don't know if I feel that way about Pat McAfee, but I know that I am in the minority on that.
Okay.
So I guess TBD. on Seth Rollins, but we know that Kevin Owens is going to WrestleMania.
That, yes, he is.
He officially called out Steve Austin. It is confirmed that he will host Steve Austin on the KO show at WrestleMania. What do we expect from this non-match? I just want to say, I think it's so funny that Kevin was like, I want you at WrestleMania. Austin, in his very intense video package, was like, it can be a talk show, it can be a match, it can be a fight, whatever. And then Kevin is like, let's have it be a talk show. I think just in storyline, that's very funny to me.
Yeah.
What do you think will happen with
this? I think, unfortunately, this is going to be kind of your copy and paste WWE WrestleMania template for let's bring back legend of yesteryear to come in, maybe give a promo, depends on how good of a talker they are. Austin was a great talker, so we'll absolutely hear him spit some words with Kevin Owens. We're probably going to have a couple beers and then a stunner, and then I think we're heading home. It's unfortunate. I mean, they absolutely hyped up everyone with the tale of a match, because it's not like we haven't seen Stone Cold Steve Austin in 19 years. Like, he has made several appearances at WrestleMania. He's dished out stunners here and there.
We've seen him do like exactly what you said.
Exactly.
At WrestleMania in Texas.
Exactly.
The New Day, I think. Yeah.
I know he has stunned the entirety of the New Day. Like, but like, it's like, exactly. Like, we have seen this before. We have seen Austin several times since he's retired, but it was the golden carrot of the match. Like, that is what got everyone talking, that Stone Cold Steve Austin is coming out of retirement to have a wrestling match. That's what got everyone going. So I'm fine with this. I mean, I'm happy to see Stone Cold Steve Austin. Like, he is, you know, one of my childhood favorites. I'll be happy for him to be a part of it, but it does feel a little like, oh, you dangled it out there and then you took it away from us, the fact that we're not getting a full-fledged match. And so, yeah. The other caveat, though, if this is a swerve so that this talk show segment at Mania then in turns into a prompt two match, that's just bad booking, because you should have just advertised it that way and not done the dumb swerve. So
yeah,
one of these two things are going to happen.
I agree with you there. I think that the worst possibility, and also to me the most likely possibility, is that the KO show turns into, well, why don't we have a match, they ring the bell, and Steve wins in like 2 minutes.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah,
he doesn't take a single like bump. That. It's just like stunner, Thez press,
yeah.
Mud hole stomp.
No, thank you.
Yeah, basically the Eric Rowan treatment from The Rock.
Yeah, that The Rock gave him. Absolutely.
I think that that is the most likely thing. I think I would be more happy with either it just being a KO show that ends in some stunners and a good time, because at least the live audience will have a great time with that. And
yeah,
that will translate. Yeah. Or I'm still holding out hope for a KO show on night one turns into a match
on night two.
Does that do you still find that a negligible point of booking?
See, that's a tough one, because at least doing it that way, by announcing it night one, you're capitalizing slightly in getting people to tune into night two. If you say like Stone Cold's gonna have a match night two, okay, cool, absolutely turning in. If somehow there are still tickets available, people are absolutely gonna sell that second night out in 24 hours. But yeah, that's the other thing, is you're giving yourself a 24-hour window.
On a weekend, too.
Like, on a weekend.
On Sunday morning. Yeah.
Yeah, so like that turnover, that's a gamble. I don't know. Like, I just personally, my personal booking, if you have Stone Cold Steve Austin ready to do a full match, like, just advertise it. Let people know. Like, they're gonna tune in. It's gonna bring viewers. Like,
can I tell you, I loved the video package from Stone Cold. I thought it was great.
Yes.
It was well done, well performed. But it make like it really it makes it a missed opportunity as the whole for me. Because you can not have Austin show up in any way, shape, or form until Mania.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember as a young lad when Austin left after not jobbing to Brock Lesnar. He left for a year. And then they announced that he was going to return to fight Eric Bischoff at the No Way Out pay-per-view. And they made it a thing where it's like, well, who knows? Maybe he won't show. And that was scheduled as a match. And Austin, after like a long 20-second pause, had his music hit and actually showed up after like not being seen at all. Mm-hmm. And that match was like 4 minutes of just Austin destroying Eric Bischoff. And I know like he's not a wrestler the way that KO is, but that was such a satisfying experience that I feel like you could have just run that back here.
Yeah.
And it would have been better than whatever we're going
to
get.
would that have been too close to akin to the John Cena Undertaker call out of like two, three years ago?
Sure. But having the person in their home stadium, I think would make more sense. And also like we'd seen Undertaker within like a year or two.
Yeah.
Of that. Mm-hmm. Like this would feel more special to me.
Yeah.
I think it could still feel really special. We could be pleasantly surprised by this. And even if the thing that we most don't want to have happen happens, we're still gonna love it in the moment. I feel like.
Yeah, you're like, right. That is true.
Yeah, we're both gonna immediately take whatever beers we have and smash them together. You know.
There's nothing wrong with some beers and throwing some stunners out. Like I will pop for that. That will be very entertaining. Just like a little bit of upset that we're not getting what everyone was talking about, but that's okay. Yeah. That's on us for building up our expectations too high.
We're going to move on to our next topic, which is another bummer, but then it won't be a bummer after this, I promise. So last Friday on SmackDown, Big E took a suplex outside the ring from Ridge Holland that resulted in him breaking his neck.
It is a wicked suplex. Oh my God.
Yeah, it is. We're not going to be like Taz and like look at this frame by frame.
I don't think there's a way to see it again unless like someone who posts on Twitter or something. Cause I think like it's been removed from.
Oh, did they scrub it? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, that's good. It's not fun to watch.
No, it's a very rough looking bump.
Yeah, so we'll get into the implications for Big E in a second, but let's talk about just storyline right now. Mm-hmm. Handing you the book, Tyler. What do you do with the New Day in Big E's absence? Which, like, you got to expect is like minimum a year.
Yeah, if potentially, I mean. There are some more reports out that
we'll get to those in a second.
Yeah. So I don't know. It's very tough because New Day has been, you know, quote unquote split up for the last like year and a half or however long it's been. And there are a lot of people saying that like they were going to reunite the New Day fully, actually put all three of them back together, make it a single unit. And Xavier Woods is also returning to action as well. So things were lining up for the New Day, and now this is just like the worst case scenario. So I don't know what story you can tell going forward. I mean, I guess you could push Kofi and Xavier into more tag team stuff, but they had already been doing tag team stuff for the past year and a half with Big E gone. So I don't know. I'm really at a loss for this one.
Yeah. If it were me, and this is a big risk, but I feel like you go to both Xavier Woods and Kofi Kingston as performers and ask them if this idea I'm about to pitch is tempting to them. And if they say yes, I think you keep all three of them off TV until they can all be reunited together.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Which might be a while. But here's
the
thing.
That could be a while.
Xavier has a lot going on outside of WWE and has been he has been gracefully critical of WWE, maybe more than anyone else in the past year as they've released people and as they have hurt the content that he creates, right?
Yeah, and I mean, they also just keep releasing all of his friends.
Yeah, they do. But he he has other revenue streams going on now. He's now a host of Attack of the Show. I know what year it is. Yes, Attack of the Show is back, and he is a host of that. And I know Kofi has young kids who are hitting that double-digit age soon, and he's been there forever, and you know his body is taking a beating. Do you say, hey, Xavier, take a year to really explore those other avenues? Kofi, take a year to rest up, be with your family, or try out being an agent or producer for us. And when we can get all three of you together, we'll do it again, and it will be a huge, huge moment. And
it'll
big
be
deal.
A massive return. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't see the, there's a group that's done everything you can do. So I don't see the point with diluting them. Yeah.
I truly love that option. I think that is the best option. I think they've earned that option to be like, hey, here is a year for you guys to relax, recuperate, whatever you need to do, and then we'll try this again when Big E is healthy.
I'd love the Netflix special New Day Rumspringa that you could watch.
Okay. Did you ever watch the New Day and the Haunted Undertaker?
No, but you
or
could
whatever?
That's what I'm saying. You could do another one of those. Another one of those. For sure. Yeah.
But yeah, so I mean, I love that option. Honestly, that'll never happen because WWE has they've especially not the Xavier Wood thing. They're not going to let Xavier off for a year to allow him to explore other revenue streams because they've spent the last 2 years making it very clear that their employees are not allowed to have other forms of income. And Xavier being the only outlier in that his YouTube channel wasn't shut down. And also his G4 contract pays WWE.
That
so
is true. Yeah.
It's there's no way I see them being sure. Go expand your brand and make yourself more valuable so you can leave us. I don't think that's happening.
Yeah.
I could see that maybe the Kofi thing, maybe them genuinely being hey, we don't have anything for you. You can take some time off, see your family and stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know because I mean, New Day is still a massive merch seller.
Mm-hmm.
So
we could say too that we don't know either of them personally. Kofi and Xavier might be the kind of people to be no, we don't want to take
that too.
Time off. We want to keep going.
Yeah, sure.
I would argue that it is maybe a smarter long-term negotiating tactic for WWE to let Xavier have this year to do other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That maybe if you give him that, he
won't
will
leave
not be
later.
As, yeah. There's a lot of stuff that him and Kenny Omega do together where they review games together for IGN and they mm-hmm. show up at video game stuff out of WWE's purview together.
Yes.
And Xavier has always tweeted and talked about when we eventually have this match or when we eventually do the Elite versus New Day. And he's because it will happen. And I feel that always had a ring of because those three people will end up in WWE at some point. And now I feel maybe this is the first time that I felt that it could go the other way.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I don't know what's going to happen to the New Day, but for Big E immediately, they announced, they reported that he has broken his neck, but it is not as bad as it could be, obviously. So
it depends
far,
on who you ask.
Well, yeah. So far from immediate reports, he has no sort of paralysis or anything. He can feel and move all of his limbs, which is right off the bat, that's the number one, especially with any broken neck injury. So that is positive. I've heard, I think Big E himself posted on Twitter or something that like he was joking about the injury afterwards, which kind of eased a lot of people's tension. But I think he said something along the lines that the doctor told him, like, you know, it was really lucky that you have such a big, muscly, meaty neck. Otherwise, it could have been a lot worse.
Yeah.
But
I do want to read, and I'm going to read more text from someone here, because it has come out that former WWE, current NFL doctor David Chow, who used to like show up on screen in a lot of those video specials they would do of like people rehabbing injuries. He was asked about the Big E injury, and he said the following, quote, "This guy's a doctor, not me. Axial load injuries are dangerous, and it seems Ewan escaped disaster." I said that right, right?
Sure.
Ewan? is that how you say Big E's first name correctly? I don't know.
I actually have no idea.
Yeah. He was able to move all the extremities and reportedly has strength. He later indicated he suffered two different fractures in the neck at the C1 and C6 vertebrae. The C1 fracture is most dangerous, as the top cervical vertebrae is a ring and is commonly associated with immediate death or complete paralysis. Thankfully, the fracture was not displaced and he will not need surgery. However, this type of fracture often heals incompletely, and it may mean the end of his wrestling career, end quote. That made a lot of people's ears perk up, understandably. We should say David Chow is not currently a WWE doctor and is not like in the room with Big E. He's just saying that typically with this injury, this is the result. I think that was the result for Paige in this particular case as well. But then you have Kurt Angle, who can, you know, win an Olympic gold medal.
You can go on to win an Olympic medal
with a broken neck, but I don't know that his C1 was
right. Yeah,
what was broken?
I mean,
yeah,
I would take it at face value in that this is a doctor who seemingly knows what they're talking about and everything, and absolutely everyone is individual. Cases can vary, even though all the signs point to the fact that they shouldn't. But so right now, like, the fact that he isn't paralyzed, he can move his arms and everything, that is positive, and that's the good news.
It's all gravy.
It's so far. If I mean, ultimately, if this leads to Big E never being able to wrestle again, that is awful, that is tragic, that sucks, but like, he's alive and he can walk, so.
And that guy is a smart cookie.
Gotta look at the big picture.
That guy is gonna be, if he can't wrestle again, he's gonna be just fine.
He's gonna be just fine. Like,
yeah, I know that Xavier's the doctor of the group, but Big E is one of the smartest people. Like, you listen to him out of character talk for like 2 seconds about anything, and it's like, oh, this guy thinks on another level.
Yeah, very intelligent, but also, I mean, super charismatic, entertaining, like, funny guy. Like, I'm sure he will easily find another outlet, whether it be in entertainment or gaming, YouTube, anything. Like, he has certainly has options, but again, he's alive and he can walk, and that these are the main things that are good.
We got four more bullet points to get through. We're doing great, I feel like, on timing. From Big E to Big Resets. That wasn't as good of a transition as
no,
I hope.
No, you've done better. Come on, man.
Yeah. From Big E to Big
Resets.
E.
Yeah. If you enunciate the reset. E. Okay. Yeah.
Okay, so in surprising moves over the last week on WWE TV, Damian Priest dropped the U.S. title to Finn Balor. Mm-hmm. Sami Zayn dropped the IC title to Ricochet, our favorite Irish wrestler. Dolph Ziggler beat Bron Breakker for the NXT championship. And then over in Jacksonville in AEW, the post-Revolution Dynamite resulted in the dissolution of the Inner Circle and the Pinnacle. You had a clean break between MJF and Wardlow. You had the creation of two new factions, the Jericho Appreciation Society. It's and the whatever
dumbest name. I'm I think sorry. It's
great. We'll talk about it.
Name. I hate it.
And whatever is going to be the name of the trio of William Regal, Bryan Danielson, and Jon Moxley. Mm-hmm. And then to cap that all off, the TNT Championship changed hands from Sammy Guevara to Scorpio Sky. Yeah. It really felt like both companies are really shaking up shaking the dice up. Which of these five moves, six moves, I don't know, a lot of moves, what of these things was the most shocking to you?
I don't know. Honestly, I think they're all kind of equally shocking and also needed in that I feel like it's not a coincidence that both of the companies did this at the same time, not because like they were, you know, thinking of what the other one was doing, but like, I think both of them had these storylines, these championships on people that these stories have been going on for a while and starting to get stale. I mean, honestly, Sammy Guevara being the TNT champion, I thought he was a great TNT champion, but it was absolutely time for him to give up that belt and give it to someone who needs it. I love that they put it on Scorpio Sky. That's an amazing idea. Damian Priest dropping the US title to Finn Balor. I'm a little biased because I love Finn Balor and I'm glad they're finally doing something with him. But Priest with that title was getting stale and like, let's mix it up. Let's, you know, change some things around. See if we can create some little more buzz going into some of like for WWE, one of the biggest weekend of the year. So I love both of these ideas, despite the horrible naming of Jericho's new faction. I really actually like this idea of AEW not being afraid to dissolve these factions when they need to.
Yeah.
It's not the WWE equivalent of breaking up a tag team 2 weeks after they were formed. I hate that. I like that. These are, you know, the Inner Circle was a day one faction for AEW. Day one was the formation of the Inner Circle. And they lasted a good 3 years. And now we've come to see the end of it. I love that. That's a perfect amount of stay for a faction. Great.
Yeah.
Now we can have all of these guys move on.
It's not the opposite, the WCW problem of having the NWO go on forever.
Too long. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I should Pinnacle, also note that the
Pinnacle
the Hardy,
was a little short-lived. Like, Pinnacle could have gone a little longer, but that's okay. Like,
I'll say also the Hardy family organization, also the HFO, also went to the wayside in this too. Yeah, I think maybe the most shocking to me is Ricochet winning the IC title just because he came from out of nowhere on the card to suddenly... Yeah. Being the champion, and because like it made sense to have the IC title, I guess, between Sami Zayn and Johnny Knoxville, like they're going to be fine without it. But it there was some intrigue with that. Yeah. I think I agree with you that maybe the best decision of all of these is actually breaking up Inner Circle is a great decision, but the moving the title from Priest to Finn is really smart because you. Even if Priest had kept the title, you assumed that the two of them were going to fight at WrestleMania, and that's like, okay, Finn's going to win it there. Now you like that is a difficult match to predict in kayfabe. Like it could go, like it is now a up in the air result, which makes it a much more watchable match.
Absolutely.
Let's talk about the Jericho Appreciation Society for a second. You hate this name.
You're
not alone with this. I think, like, to me, it is perfect because of how obnoxious it is.
Does it
not roll off the tongue? Like,
it doesn't roll off the tongue. Okay. It works. If you think about the grand picture in that Jericho is full heel again and... His impetus, his point for this was that, you know, the Inner Circle didn't appreciate him enough. The Inner Circle didn't appreciate the fact that he was Chris Jericho and he was leading them and trying to, you know, help them and everything. So I do enjoy that the fact that this new faction is going off the name is 100% built around the fact that I am Chris Jericho and all of these people love me for that. Like, they respect me because I'm Chris Jericho. So I get that. I just, I don't know. There could just be a little more creative juices flowing for the name.
They could have been the Jericho-holics, but maybe that would have raised some trademark
I don't know
issues.
If that's trademark, yeah, but...
Well, he tried... Jericho just tried to trademark Sports Entertainer.
Did he?
So maybe it was going to be like the Jericho Sports Entertainment group or something.
That's not bad.
And they're like, no, that's not going to happen.
We're not doing that.
I think they should have been the Jericho Wrestling Buddies. I think, like, I honestly think, like, a name that's, like, even more stupid would have worked.
Jericho and Friends.
That would have been great to basically just run back Coon and Friends from South Park as a Jericho storyline.
We
like,
are Jericho and Friends.
Yeah. Man, it could have just been Jericho. Like, J-E-R-I space C-O dot.
Oh, that is that Jericho. That is pretty good.
Yeah, but I guess it would have made commentary awful. Like it
would have been.
Jerry but, and Co. I guess
Jerry and Co.
would have made that work.
The Chris Jericho Experience or something like that.
That is the best name to me. What you just said, I think that both accomplishes storyline what they want to be this group that is going to try to take themselves very seriously but be laughed at as heels, and it would have rolled off the tongue. And it would have went into the kind of rock and roll persona. Yeah.
And that's,
too.
I was going to say, it leads to that. Like, Chris Jericho in this heel persona is very much, he's the front man of the band, but it's David Lee Roth. It's the band named after him is what it is. Yeah. Like, he wants the Chris Jericho Experience. Like, I like that idea if like, that's what we're going for, but. I don't know. I just could have done better naming.
is there one of these that makes you the most excited about it being the beginning of a potential new storyline?
I'm very excited for Scorpio Sky being a TNT champion. He needed that belt. He needed that win. I'm excited to see what they do going forward, and especially excited to see who's going to get that belt off of him later down the line, because it opens up so many possibilities. But that's probably my favorite choice so far.
Yeah, I think it kind of that combined with the debut of Paige VanSant, like, kind of quickly elevates this faction, the Damn Lambert. American Top Team faction, into being now the de facto biggest heel faction in the company. So let's rewind. We've gone over into the AEW portion of our show. Revolution was 2 weeks ago.
It took place.
No titles changed hands, but it had a big pay-per-view atmosphere. Lots of highly regarded matches. I think it had 4 matches that got 4 3/4 stars on it. It also faced criticisms for a tired audience, a perceived tired audience, and for being too long.
Yeah.
Your review of the show, which of those sides does it fall on?
I'm in the middle. I'm absolutely in the middle. There were great matches. There really were. I dug them. But I'm not going to lie. Like, I was dozing off towards the end of that pay-per-view. Because, like, I mean... This could just be, you know, it was, I really hate that AEW pay-per-views are on Sundays now. I don't know why they ever switched from Saturday. Like, it was so perfect when they were on Saturdays, but they're on Sundays now. And now sometimes they're going to the midnight, which is, it's rough. Like when you got to work Monday morning and like you've had like a full weekend to yourself. Like, I was very tired. I had some heavy eyelids around like the main event starting, and it was tough for me to get through. So it was a long show. It felt really long, but the matches were great. And like, don't get me wrong, I was absolutely invested in the earlier matches so much. They were so wonderful. I mean, shoot, favorite points in the night, just moments. the triple threat tag match with the Bucks, Red Dragon, and Dress Express. Excellent. Absolutely amazing. Loved it. Literally that match, the point of that match was to further the storyline between Red Dragon and Bucks. But at no point did the Jurassic Express look weak at all. Like, no. It was, yeah. They just added to it. It was so good. Absolutely love CM Punk's ROH entrance. That was so great. What a throwback.
That whole match was great, but it did feel like the pay-per-view should end after that match. I know it was halfway through the show, but the gravitas of that match and the storytelling of it, I think, like, killed the crowd after. I felt so bad for Britt Baker and Thunder Rosa having to go out after that.
Yeah, having to follow that. Absolutely.
But I think clearly maybe they anticipated that was going to happen. So this wasn't the biggest rematch in AEW women's history that it should have been. I think we're going to get that this week.
Well, and I think that's Sarah fantasy booked this like a couple weeks ago, where she, like, even before Revolution, I think she was like, here's how it's going to work. Thunder Rosa is not going to win at Revolution because she's going to get to challenge for the belt again at whatever the
St. Patrick's Day Slam
or whatever, which is a year to the day of their previous hardcore match that was like match of the year, and it's also in like San Antonio or something, which is basically Thunder Rosa's hometown, and that's where she wins the belt. And I was like, damn it, that's good booking.
That makes much more sense than trying to get the fans back after the bloodbath that was CM Punk and MJF in a dog collar match. I'm going to say that I think I watched Revolution the best way you possibly could have, which is I watched the first few matches. I watched through Punk live, but I was in a social setting where I needed to then like actually go hang out with the people I was with. After that. And then I watched that Sunday night, and then Monday afternoon, I crawled into bed after work and watched the rest of the pay-per-view. And that was great.
That does sound great, actually.
I feel like AEW Revolution 2022 was the Batman of wrestling, and that it was way too long, but people are really into it, and it's all about just like, can you get yourself for that theater experience of being like, I haven't been in a theater in 2 years, and now I'm going to be in it for 3 hours watching this movie that is, you know, very demands your attention. Like, like you can't just watch it passively. Right.
Yeah.
And maybe that's the issue with a AEW pay-per-view being 5 hours, is that you can't watch it passively and enjoy it the way that a WWE show you can watch passively and enjoy it. And like that, you just can't do that. It is an exhausting undertaking.
It is. Yeah.
Not to be outdone, not to get lost in the shuffle, going back in time a little bit. On the go-home show for Revolution, Tony Khan announced that he had purchased Ring of Honor. A lot has happened since our last episode.
The stories keep coming.
Yeah. What do you think is the most immediate, or what do you think the like immediate ramifications of this announcement will be, and what are the long-term ramifications of it?
Immediate ramifications. AEW gets that ROH library, and that is a great pool of material for them to complement the 3 years of AEW they already have backlogged to start themselves a streaming service. So I think that is definitely direction number one, and probably the biggest point in purchasing Ring of Honor. Now
they gotta get the it's not worth it if you can't watch it though. So like they do need to get that deal struck, and I'm sure that's what they're working on. But I'll let you keep going.
Now the going forward, what this means, there's been a lot of speculation on what is the actual future of Ring of Honor itself. Is it going to still operate? Is it going to be a wrestling company? Is it going to act as like AEW's pseudo NXT, where people will come to Ring of Honor and then work their way up to AEW or something like that? I don't know. Best case scenario, it does keep operating almost without a change. Like, I would keep, don't like call it Ring of Honor, keep everything almost the same, try to bring back as many of the Ring of Honor people who were previously contracted as you can. this is the craziest like fantasy booking I've heard. This conspiracy theory. I'm sure you've probably heard this, but I want to explain it right now. And this pertains to one Cody Rhodes. The reason why we haven't seen Cody on WWE yet is because he never signed with WWE. And that's because he never really left AEW. He's not an AEW under AEW contract because he's about to be under Ring of Honor contract. And Cody Rhodes is going to show up on Ring of Honor when they come back to either, I don't know, on screen book it, off screen book it, be the pseudo Triple H of Ring of Honor character, like what have you. And personally, that might be a best case scenario for me. Like, that sounds incredible. Ring of Honor Cody, it was probably like one of the best Codys ever. So yeah. I don't know.
I've heard that with him being the booker, basically being like Tony wasn't gonna let him run AEW with the creative input that he wanted, but like you can run
Ring of Honor
and do whatever you want. We'll all be happy and you can cross over into AEW again.
And I love that. If that's the case, I love
that as a short term thing. I don't know that will keep everyone copacetic for the long haul. I feel like Tony could say like, hey, yeah, I bought this toy, you can go play with it, but then I think he's the kind of person that if he sees Cody playing rough with it, will try to get his hands back on it.
If Cody makes that toy really cool and everyone loves that toy.
Yeah. That could happen. I don't know that it... If it does happen, I don't know that will have been the intention the whole time. I think we could back into that happening. I think... To me, I think it is most likely that it will become a developmental territory in a sense for AEW. Tony has to book the Supercard of Honor show that was booked for WrestleMania previously, and there's currently zero people under Ring of Honor contract. Jonathan Gresham has been defending that belt because he physically has it, but now that is property of Tony Khan.
that's a weird conversation.
So it's like, Jonathan Gresham doesn't have any like negotiating power there. He is the person who I would offer the most money to be like, we're gonna keep Ring of Honor going, let me try to get you back under contract.
Right.
But like the problem is that most of the other upper mid card to top card people in Ring of Honor are now like cemented in Impact. And I imagine a lot of them have contracts. Then you also have like you have luminaries of Ring of Honor, like the Briscoes, who I think are going to become, like, are going to go the way of Jeff Jarrett when WCW got bought by WWE, where like they had no interest in Jarrett, and I don't think like it's come out that Warner Media has told Tony Khan in no uncertain terms that they do not want the Briscoes, in AEW. So like I think it will be hard to sign a bunch of the contemporary Ring of Honor people because they're just not gonna have the money, or like Tony Khan's not gonna be willing to give them AEW size contracts.
No, definitely not.
So there's gonna have to be crossover from on that immediate show. There's got to be AEW people, or like everyone who came out of the Nightmare Factory and everyone they sign going forward who is younger.
Yeah.
You're going to sign for a Ring of Honor contract and then eventually work your way over, would be my guess. Yeah. So we'll see. I think we'll know a lot more once that Super Card of Honor show happens, like what Tony really wants to do with it.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Looking forward to that AEW streaming service, though.
I think it will be on HBO. I feel like once they get it figured out. Yeah. Yeah. Once they get it figured out, it's going to be amazing. So our final bullet, we made it. Three new faces have shown up in AEW over the past few weeks. I guess four. I guess Keith Lee returned right as we were doing our last episode. Jeff Hardy returned to Dynamite to help save his brother from a beatdown. Shane Swerve Strickland was signed to Revolution, and William Regal appeared at Revolution as well to manage the team of Mox and Danielson. Which of these three is the best signing for AEW right now?
this is gonna sound so backwards because he's not a wrestler, but he's not active. I mean he's not active. It's William Regal. It's William Regal. That's absolutely the best option for you, and not even just for the incredible on-screen story that they're telling right now of pairing him with Bryan Danielson and Jon Moxley. Like, that's awesome. But think of all the things that you can do with William Regal backstage. William Regal was literally the cornerstone of the best iteration of NXT for years. And now you have him in your company to work with all of this brand new crop of young talent and instill his incredible knowledge onto them, and also be a bouncing board for your creative team. Like, everyone, like, William Regal is such an incredible get for AEW in so many facets, not even just on-screen stories, like so many. It's brilliant.
Yeah. I would argue, he is most valuable as a developmental trainer and as a talent scout, which was something you really need if you just acquired a second company that is maybe going to be developmental. He could be the Ring of Honor.
I was going to say, give Ring of Honor to William Regal. Like, literally, we're going to make NXT again, and we'll show you why the first one was so successful.
Yeah. I mean, it would be cool if his faction, like, if they've really been, like, the name on the contract isn't Khan, it's Regal. Like, and if him and Daniel, like, and Bryan Danielson and Jon Moxley for a little bit were just on Ring of Honor, and I think you move those two guys back over, but, like, to have Regal uphold the tradition of Honor, mm-hmm. I mean, is like a no-brainer.
Yeah.
I think the most valuable person here, actually, I differ from you. I mean, Regal himself said he doesn't have a lot of time left. So,
yeah.
but I think it's Swerve.
Okay.
Like, he was someone who I had not seen much of before he went to WWE, right? Because
mm-hmm.
I just wasn't watching Ring of Honor and things like that at that point. But he came in with a lot of acclaim. It took a while, but then they did a lot of good stuff with him in the NXT, to the point that I was like, he was one of the people I was most shocked at when he was released from WWE.
Yeah.
And I was equally as shocked at how over he was at Revolution and then on Dynamite, and how much the people who know about him and the audience knew his playbook already and knew how to react to him. That really genuinely surprised me. So I know that, like, we've talked about Scorpio Sky becoming champion and Keith Lee coming over as AEW addressing a problem of not having enough black stars to push. I think maybe Swerve, I think Strickland is the guy. I think he is, like, the A1 big black single star that they're gonna push.
He definitely has the most upside. Absolutely. He's a fairly young guy. Like, he's very good in the ring. He has so much potential. I will agree with that. If I had to rank him, like, personally, I would say Regal, Strickland, Hardy in that order. But yeah,
Paige VanSant after that, Keith
and
Lee.
Well, she's,
well, mate, where do you put Keith Lee on that?
If we're adding Keith Lee, because I am a...
He looked a little rusty, I will say.
A little bit.
He's going to need some time to come back.
I'm a mark for Keith Lee, though, so it might be like Regal 1A and Keith Lee 1B with Paige VanZant, like, off the list. I'm really not looking forward to that. I don't know why. Why is she doing this? Didn't she have a very public interview after her first AEW stint where she was like, that wasn't fun, I don't want to do that again?
Yeah, like, but that may have been.
And now
little...
she's just going to be a wrestler? Like,
what? No, that may have been a little kayfabed, I think.
Yeah. I don't know.
I think if they're like, hey, you want to be the Ronda Rousey of AEW, they can.
God, I hope not. Don't push her that hard.
I don't know that they will, but I think that was probably the pitch.
Maybe.
But they also have Marina Shereef now, too, so
okay.
Yeah. But we were saying, like, it to me, I think maybe I've come around to being like, oh, maybe Strickland is more valuable than Lee for this particular usage. But also, like, they don't need to be put into a box the way that I just did too. Like they get sure. like there doesn't need to be just like one black single star to rule them all in AEW.
There's
certainly a lot that they could all be successful at the same time, and I think maybe they all will. But I do think that there is like a conscious decision on Tony Khan's part to be like, here is a place that we have failed and we need to address it. I think like the rise of Jade Cargill is a reaction to that as well. And I know we've moved past two bullet points ago, but I was shocked at how much I loved the Jade Cargill-Ty Conti match.
I love Jade Cargill. I have been on the Jade train for a while now. She has such upside and like so much potential. Like I was saying this like very early on, like she absolutely can be the Charlotte of AEW. Yeah. Like maybe not the same storyline and everything, but like in terms of like dominating and like impact on the division and stuff, like she could absolutely do it. She has all the tools.
I'm going to make an even bolder prediction here and say that I think she has Bill Goldberg upside for AEW.
Ooh, okay.
And that they are both people who came from somewhere else, have a giant look, and were pushed immediately without being trained much at all, right? And
she does have the streak going right now.
Yeah. And but I think that where like Goldberg immediately out of the gate had a reputation for being like, I don't need to learn anything else, and like had a reputation for hurting people, I feel like the way that Jade's coworkers talk about her, like of course she plays this like I'm the bad bitch like character on TV, but like out of character she seems to be someone who is very self-aware, knows where her strengths and weaknesses are, is working really hard to become a better wrestler daily so that she can have longer matches. I know she's training personally with Bryan Danielson right
That's
now
a
and
huge
seems
help
like
right there.
Yeah. she's the rookie carrying people's bags backstage and still able to go out and be the dominant performer on the stage. I think that is, man, that's a scary the most upside ever. Sorry, she has, sorry, Swerve, like this is the most upside.
She has possible. So much potential.
Yeah. All right. I think we hit it. I think we hit everything in a pretty decent amount of time, in less than half of the Batman. So I think that's impressive. Is there anything that you want to plug before we get out of here, Tyler?
I do not right now. You know, just stay positive. Keep your heads up out there, y'all.
Yeah, keep your heads up. Stay away from shower heads. That won't make sense because I don't think we were recording when
that's
I talked
okay.
about that. That's all right. Make sure to go to muchadowrestling.com.
Oh, yeah, fill out your bracket.
Fill out the brackets. And by that, I mean vote on who you want to see advance the next round. Make sure to leave your name and your email address at the bottom of that form so that you're eligible for a chance to win the $50 Pro Wrestling Tees gift card.
Yes.
You can find it on muchadowrestling.com on the homepage. We'll link out to it in the notes for this episode, but it's also on the homepage there. And as always, we're going to leave you with the words of the immortal William Shakespeare. If wrestling be the food of love, fight on.
You know who I am, but you don't know why I'm here.
Man, he really... It's so many moments. So many moments for good. Mm-hmm.